From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Being situated among two rivers has made the soil in the Willamette Valley nearly perfect for farming. And indeed, our community has a rich history of agriculture. Great to feed Oregonians, but sometimes not so great for the environment. By converting natural environments into farms, people scraped the landscape of native trees and plants and also harmed immeasurable numbers of animals and birds. Today on the show, you'll hear how conservationists have been slowly returning nature to its original settings. One key natural laboratory you'll learn about is Green Island, the preserve purchased by the Mackenzie River Trust that has been reclaimed from its farming past and being slowly returned to its original wild splendor. Carved out by the Mackenzie River, this large island is now a true oasis for fish and birds and plants and trees. That's next on Oregon on the Record. While humans are unmatched for our ability to change an environment, there is a natural phenomenon that is also amazing at forcing change, and that's a river. Specifically, in our community, the mighty Mackenzie River has continually shaped and changed its watershed over millennia. Back in 1964, during an enormous flood, it carved an entirely new channel that exists today. One of the amazing excavation projects the river did was dredging out channels to create Green Island north of Coburg. This land, which was once owned by the Green family and a major farm, has been given over to the Mackenzie River Trust, who has converted it back to its original habitat. What once was rows and rows of crops is now a true sanctuary of trees, birds, animals, and plants. Today on the show, we'll bring you conversation with two of the trustees' leaders from the grounds of Green Island, where river otters often play. We talk with Joe Mole, its executive director, and Holly McCray, its outreach manager. First, Holly lets us know how Green Island came to be.
Green Island is one of Mackenzie River Trust's conservation properties located at the confluence of the Mackenzie River and the Willamette River. It's about 1,100 acres, and it's a property that Mackenzie River Trust acquired in 2003. So the Green family was a family that operated a farm here for about three generations. Nobody ever actually lived on Green Island, but the Green family farmed out here all different types of crops, and they also had livestock out here. They employed a lot of the residents of Coburg who would come out here and work in the summertime. And when they were finally at a point where they were considering selling the property, Karen Green worked with the folks at Mackenzie River Trust to sell the property. She, over the years, had become very appreciative of the fish and wildlife that were out here. They would come out here and camp during the summertime, and she just really loved the property so much. She wanted to see it protected for those values, for in perpetuity. And so in working with Mackenzie River Trust, she sold the property. And then when Mackenzie River Trust took this property, there was a lot of land that had been in agriculture, with the intent being to turn it over or back to sort of a floodplain forest. And so over 1 million trees and shrubs have been planted over the last 20 years. 5,600 feet of levees have been removed. And then with both MRT staff and volunteers, every year there's stewardship actions that are going on. The removal of blackberries, the planting of trees, the planting of willows, even the monitoring of birds. So volunteers are really important part of our current stewardship of this property right now.
So Joe, tell listeners why Green Island is important, why it was important for Mackenzie River Trust to acquire this property, and you know what it means both from an ecological perspective, but also just for a community building perspective.
Yeah, after the 64 flood and then again the 96 flood, the recognition that even with the dams upriver, these rivers are very alive. They shift their channels year to year, season to season. And this confluence between the Mackenzie and the Willamette was highlighted as an area very rich in biodiversity. So the initial acquisition was really with an eye towards that fish and wildlife habitat. Over time, as the Mackenzie River Trust and partners have stewarded this place, we've also brought in a lot of people who have just developed their own love for the place. And it's at a time when, let's face it, people are pulled out of the natural world more easily than they're pulled into it. And so we've been able, through second Saturday open days and events and tours, to just give people the opportunity to re-engage with nature and sort of rediscover that joy that they experienced as a kid. Do you remember what it was like, Michael, to be out as a kid just exploring even a small piece of land near where you grew up, and to have 1,000 acres or so to both roam over and learn, and also that for most of the time it's set aside so that the wildlife that have been hit pretty hard over the last century or so can thrive. So it's that mix of protecting areas for the natural world itself and then giving places for people to come and love and engage with the natural world.
Okay. Holly, how do you take an island that was converted for agriculture and restore it to its natural beauty?
Well, it's not easy, and I would say it's a work in progress. At the time Mackenzie River Trust purchased this property, this was the largest scale restoration project of this type, and so even just where do you plant trees and what do you plant was a bit of an experiment. And so really, at Green Island, you can almost imagine like a living landscape laboratory where we're kind of learning about what's working, what's not working, and especially in a changing climate. And so a dozen different tree species were planted over the island, and over time we're seeing what works well, what doesn't work, even whether or not you water trees. Initially, the first planting, irrigation was not used, and the success rate was not very high. And so adapting to that, we had irrigation lines on Green Island. We were able to use those, and so change the tactics, plant things in rows so that you can mow between the rows, allow those trees and shrubs to kind of get established, water them. And now we're at a point where all those irrigation lines have been pulled and all the trees and shrubs we planted are either free to grow and live or to die. And so over time, we'll kind of see what works well, what doesn't, what makes it. And it's already starting to look like a more natural landscape.
Joe, the river is going to do what it wants to do. How do you work with the river at different times? Obviously, it can be very low, but also it can flood and change things. How do you work with perhaps an unwilling partner?
I can't tell you how many times we have choked on humble pie out here. Right where we're standing, we did an initial bit of work to clear out some weeds, and we were feeling very good about it. And the next winter, the river just came and blew everything out. And so really trying to understand the history of the river, and I think partners at the U of O and Oregon State University who have really helped us see again that we tend to think this time of year in summer especially that the river is this single threaded channel, and yet for millennia it has moved back and forth east and west across this floodplain. And so trying to learn from that active floodplain, trying to secure enough land that if we lose some because the river picks it up and redistributes it downstream, we can celebrate that. That's a difficult thing to do, whether you're in a city or in a production agricultural area. And so just recognizing that the goal here isn't to preserve sort of a place itself as much as the dynamics. Give the river a place to move and run and change and be okay with that. Right behind us, you can see an area that just in 2006, 2007, the river made a big shift from the west and went straight to the north. And right behind us, now you have 30-foot tall cottonwoods and willow that came in naturally. So the system is resetting itself. It's a place where the flora and fauna evolved can play out. And so we really have to step back from thinking we can control too much and accept that, yeah, we're going to make some assumptions and some will work out and some won't. We do know the one constant, of course, is change.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Holly McCray and Joe Moll from the Mackenzie River Trust. We're standing right next to, on Green Island, next to the river. Holly, I am wondering, in terms of just in the years that Mackenzie River Trust has controlled this area, how has the larger environment, a la climate change and stuff, how have you seen that change impact what we have here on Green Island?
Oh gosh, that is a tricky one to answer directly. I think that what we're seeing right now, like one of the tree species that I think is kind of interesting to look at is oaks. There's a part of Green Island where the Oregon white oak was planted, and it's just not doing very well. And it's hard to say, is that because of climate change? Is it not? But we do know that there are some tree species that are better adapted to a warming climate than others. I think it's too early right now in these plantings to be able to directly correlate that. But you know, seasonal flooding certainly is something that we see out here, and larger, bigger storms. Historically, those would have happened always anyway, but we've got dam control upriver that sort of mitigate the impacts of those floodings. But nonetheless, we do see high water events where the river will hop its banks, come over, and basically flood much of Green Island. Green Island can hold that water, it can store that water, slowly release it, and so it does act as a buffer for some of those climate change impacts like big floods.
Okay. Joe, obviously many people are familiar with the Mackenzie and perhaps either driving by, biking by, walking by. What if they were here with us now, what would they see here on Green Island that might be different than what they're used to seeing along both of the rivers, the Mackenzie and the Willamette?
Yeah, I think here with so much dynamism and the change in channels year to year, you see a lot of gradation of plants. So you've got open gravel bars and maybe some newly established low shrubs. And then right behind that, you have willow that were established 5 years ago and cottonwood that were established 10 years ago. And Green Island, despite being in agriculture for about 100 years, was never really leveled. So you'll see the history that here was a channel, and you walk across what you think of as a flat plain, but you might have the remnants of an old channel that's 10 feet below where you were walking before. And so I think it's that diversity of place. And if they were adventurous enough to sort of step into the river itself, they would feel things that are different from other parts of the basin, where you have, again, these channel movements. Temperature is something that these rivers have become increasingly stressed by, and there are wonderful places on Green Island that demonstrate that when you have a connected floodplain and so many channels out there, you have water that goes subsurface into what's called the hyporheic zone. And when it emerges again, it emerges as much colder, sometimes 20 degree colder, like springs within the river. For fish, salmon, and trout especially, those cold water upwellings are just critical. And when you're walking along in the river and you hit one of them, it's beautiful. It's a shock to the system, but it also makes you recognize that how much warmer the Willamette River is getting and how much of a stressor that is. That'll be something that with climate change we're going to be having to work with and deal with for the next century.
Holly, I'm wondering too, you know, as you've been here and really, kind of walked around and really got to know this place, were you surprised at how resilient an environment like this can be? Obviously, you know, it was a very different place decades ago to what it is now. Have you been surprised at how, I guess, like I said, resilient nature can be in coming back to its original shape and form?
Yeah, I what is actually more surprising to me is how quickly it changes. I've been working out here now for a little over 10 years, and I can remember coming out here with my daughter, and these trees were no more than like 3 or 4 feet tall, and you're now looking at 10 and 15 foot trees. So nature can quickly change. I do think, like, returning to what is an interesting question, because it certainly will never be exactly what it was prior to farming. And it will become something else, and it's always becoming something else. That's kind of the magic of Green Island, is that in order to stay the same, it has to constantly change. Mm-hmm. And that's what we see out here.
Yeah. Joe, talk about some of the flora and fauna that are here that maybe, because it is protected, that perhaps, like kind of my previous question, folks may not normally see when they're outside of Green Island, that when they could come here, and what might they see that's a bit different?
Yeah, I think most of us are typically looking at the birds, for example, that come into our feeders. And birds that thrive in urban environments are generalists. They're ones that adapt to having people around and a lot of disturbance and noise and things. And the diversity of birds that are out here is just one of the more, I think, shocking to the senses, just the beauty of color and sound. The other aspect of things is a little, you see more sign. There's a lot of scat that's around there. You occasionally find the remains of a bird or another animal that was killed by another animal. But the beauty of the size of this area, I don't know that we're attracting anything new, but the numbers now. You just have that much less disturbance by human intervention on a regular basis. So you have greater densities. And what we talked about before, that those gradations of habitat, you have different areas for different life histories of sometimes even the same birds and animals, that when they have a greater range of places to live, you see a greater diversity of response. Not unlike humans in our own urban cultures, where you have these rich urban cultures that erupt when we have all sorts of niches for people to fill and explore.
Holly, what are the goals of Mackenzie River Trust with Green Island, maybe in the near future, in the next 3 to 5 years? What do you hope to see to continue that sort of a thing?
I think one of the things that we're working on right now is looking at the landscape and thinking about how best do we utilize volunteers on the land? Where can they really play an active role in helping us steward these lands? We're looking also at what's the capacity for engaging folks in coming out here. It's really amazing to see the interest in folks coming out for those Living River Exploration Days, but also for our tours that we offer out here throughout the year. Those fill instantly, and there's waiting lists. People really want the opportunity to get out here and explore. And so as Joe was mentioning sort of that balance, thinking about how do we balance the desire of folks to come out here and explore with those of the wildlife. So really thinking about how do we time those seasonally based on nesting activities and other types of things. And also make sure we can provide access because people really value these lands. I think from an ecological standpoint, we're at a place right now where it's really fascinating to watch what is going to survive, what's not going to survive. And there's always opportunities to look at how do we plant more natives out here? What would that look like? The swales that we dug in the south to connect channels, those are ones that we continue to plant right now. And then there's a lot of monitoring of the species to see what's out here and how they're doing.
Okay, I apologize if this is an unfair question, but what's your favorite location here on Green Island?
I was just telling Joe, actually, we're standing at it right now. So this spot that we're looking at with this side channel, I've had the pleasure of watching otter and mink and beaver. I've seen a ton of wildlife from this spot. It's also a really good spot to look for sign of wildlife. I was sharing with you that this is an active otter latrine for much of the year. And so when leading tours, this is a good place to bring people. You'll also find on those open days that these rocks will be covered with people who are doing plein air painting or are birding or just playing the guitar or just sitting by the river. You asked Joe earlier what's sort of unique about this place. One of the things I think that's unique is that you can get to the edge of the river here and not hear a road behind you or a parking lot. It's one of the few places that you could just be on the river and not have any other sounds other than natural sounds.
Okay. Joe, how healthy is the Mackenzie River today?
Well, that is a really good, complicated question. You know, I think that we in this part of Oregon have some of the cleanest water, drinking water and that sort of thing. The trends are not great. The Mackenzie itself emerging from groundwater starts really well. But the sort of cumulative effects of our love for the river is that we like to be close to rivers. And so we've made our roads close to rivers. We have people that continue to build right on the edges of rivers. And I understand the draw. We all love to be next to rivers. But it's hard for us to see the cumulative effects of having vehicles close to rivers, having roads, having houses. And so you're starting to see the Mackenzie also show those signs of higher temperatures, greater contaminant loads. By comparison, we're still so far above so many rivers, not only in Western Oregon, but around the world. The health of the Mackenzie River, even the health of the Willamette, is pretty good. I think there was a study back in the mid-2010s that sort of gave the Willamette, in general, a, quote, B+, in terms of both species richness, water quality, temperature, and those sorts of things. But it's the trends that we have to watch. And again, with increased temperature, the wild swings in weather that we're experiencing, the trends in native species and non-native competitive species, all of those things add up to a lot of questions. I think the best thing that we can do, not only coming to places like Green Island, but to take this back home and think about, where do we need to be close to the river and where can we really back away and give it a bit more of a buffer? Because that buffer really is an investment in the health of the river long term.
Okay. Holly, last question to you. So folks who want to come out here, how do they do it?
Yeah, so you can go on our website, mackenzieriver.org, and we have an events calendar that shows all the opportunities we offer both on Green Island and our other lands. The Living River Exploration Days are open. That's where we open Green Island on the second Saturday of the month, March through December. And then we also offer volunteer opportunities on the land here at Green Island. Those are also on our calendar. And so we try and provide lots of ways in which people can engage on the land and learn more about Mackenzie River Trust and our conservation efforts here.
Holly McCray and Joe Moll, thank you both so much for bringing me out here to Green Island. I really appreciate it.
It's our pleasure. Thank you so much.
Glad we could do it, Michael.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Before we go, I wanted to talk briefly about our show yesterday where we interviewed the former student body president from the University of Oregon. We talked about her controversial speech during commencement where she included support for Palestine and where she also included an expletive directed towards ICE. That student was admonished later by a member of the Board of Trustees during a conference call after the speech. We received many comments about the show, some positive and some negative. Some supported her right to speak truth to power, others thought she was being insensitive towards her audience. One point I want to make perfectly clear. Several listeners expressed disappointment that a member of the trustees was not part of the show. As I explained yesterday on the show and will do so now, we did reach out to the trustees and they declined to make anyone available. As always, we truly appreciate your comments, both positive and negative. Tomorrow on the show, I recently got a chance to ride along with the Eugene Police Patrol officer during a busy Friday night and got to experience the good, the bad, and the truly bizarre of a typical night for Eugene Police. We arrested subjects and brought them to jail, and it was a very eye-opening experience. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.